Accession number 28698, Real 8.
C. Lawton, Real 8. You come back and you've just discovered that you're to undertake a role in Northern Ireland. Did you have any training for this? Did they know what they were going into and were training you for it, or did they train you for it?
No, we got the word that we were going to re-roll and go straight to Northern Ireland to help the IUC out, or the B Specials at the time, in the internal security role. So we got some quick briefings, loaded up the wagons, got on the ferry at Liverpool and sailed across to Belfast. We were met, we were taken originally to a factory at Antrim. The factory had been, the outer wall had been put in and the heating had been put into this factory, and there was running water and nothing else. So the battalion dropped all the stores off in there, and then we were more or less on standby for call by the IUC to go where we were sent to.
Were you sleeping on the floor, as it were?
No, somebody, the pre-advanced part, you get in there and put some bunk beds up and put rows in, A company, B company, C company, D company, and a partitioned area off where we could put our suitcases and anything we carried our kit in. We then went to the back of the factory onto an open space where we did the basics of internal security, box formation with shields and banners.
Can you take me through? Box formation is what, rows of you in a box anyway.
A box of soldiers, where the outer people facing out over. Once you halt and you do a left and right turn, so you're facing the crowd on the outside. The inner people contain the company commander, the platoon commanders, the scribes to write down, and the photographers to photograph anything that's about to happen in your particular area. And then the rest of the bayonet troops, if you want, who may be called upon to do any shooting or any riot control.
So, and the outer row, the outer rows, they had shields, did you say?
We had batons and shields. We were there because we hadn't had the rules of engagement to use live ammunition, if that was the required measure to take. But we were the baton and shield squad, where we would fend off anybody tried to push past a particular road junction, roadblock, or wherever we ended up. And we're trained in suppression against crowds pushing against us.
It's an entirely different role for anything you've ever done.
For me in particular, and most of the other battalion, in fact all the rest of the battalion, because I think the last time internal security in a box formation we used had been years earlier in Aden. In fact, so much when we unfurled the banner to warn the people disperse or we use gas, it was still written in Arabic.
So you had this banner, of course, which you put up in the tent.
Disperse or we use gas, but it was in Arabic, yeah.
And this is in Northern Ireland still? But
this is Northern Ireland, because what you do when you draw internal security requirements, you go to a place called Thatcham, and they store all batons, shields, body armour, anything you require for the IS drills. And of course, nobody checks them. It's checked in and checked out. And you hopefully, the last battalion used it, had put it back in good order. So I don't think anybody checked in what language the instructions were written in.
So you unfurled this banner in Arabic?
Yeah.
And was this just a training situation? I mean, did you unfurl in the street in Arabic?
Well, the particular one we used then was at the back of this factory where we're doing the box formation.
You're training your box formation in the back.
Yes. However, when it came to doing it for the first time, the next banner we opened was exactly the same. So, some amusement seeing as the world's press was there. Because this is one of the biggest riots, and it was in the centre of Belfast between the Protestant enclaves and the Catholic enclaves.
When you said that there were photographers in the centre of the box,
that was our.
They were your, not civilian.
No, they were our battalion photographers from the intelligence cell.
So you had to keep a pretty good you had to look very carefully what was going on and photograph it, presumably, in case you had charges against you for...
Well, that was it. I mean, and hopefully recognising people for a later date who were the agitators. Because even when you're doing the IS training, you'll pick the guy, and we always say the man in the red shirt, and then you'll fire the baton guns at him, or the hand baton people will go out and arrest the man, and you always say the man in the red shirt, or the man in the black hat, or something like that. So, and this is all photographed and documented.
Can we just stick to the training for the moment? You've got batons. What police batons?
Ordinary, straightforward wooden police batons.
And baton guns. What were those?
Well, baton guns. It's like the 1-inch Vary pistol, except you put a plastic bullet into it. So when it's fired, it's not live ammunition. It's a solid plastic bullet, about 3 inches by 1 inch diameter, which you bounce off the road. So hopefully it'll bounce up and hit people from the knee down over and tipple them over, which gives the baton squad then a chance to run out into the crowd, grab that man and grab him back and put him inside the box.
So you hadn't to shoot at people direct?
Nope.
You were aimed to shoot down?
And bounce them up,
I think they would have caused quite a nasty injury, did they, in reality?
Well, they weren't getting used that much. That was the... they were there, but we were using hand batons, i.e. the wooden batons in our hands at that particular time. But that's the idea of box formation and baton drills.
And within your box, you'd have this snatch squad, in effect. Was that the idea?
And I was part of that snatch squad. These were guys that would run out, grab who they'd been told to grab, and pull them back inside the box and arrest them. And that was the idea.
So the box would open and close and...
No, well, yes it would if it's the guys behind, but not the way we were going to do it for the first half was the baton squad, which was us 8 people in the front. We would go out and we would do the grabbing.
And how much training did you get at this? How much time?
Well, we didn't. We went through the basic drills, so when we got the halt, we all halted. When we got the outward facing, we'd all face out. So it was done as a shock tactic to the civvies, because they wouldn't have seen this happen either. And, of course, when we marched, we were battened because it was steel shields that we had. And it was quite effective, something like the Romans. And so it was quite an effective drill.
It must have been quite heavy, the shields.
No, they were little tin shields. They were quite ineffective, actually. And the bricks and the ball bearings and that came in, they actually folded in on it. Folded in on us.
So the very early days, aren't they?
They were early days, unexpected, and nobody had anything to combat modern internal security. So it was a quick measure that we thought would work.
Am I right that at this time the role was basically to keep the Catholics and the Protestants away from each other?
Yes, it was. What had been happening previously was during the civil rights marches, because Protestants and Catholics lived on the same estate side by side. And for reasons best known to the politicians, this was all breaking down. The Catholics wanted a fair share in fair housing, fair medical, fair jobs and everything else, and the Protestant-run Northern Ireland weren't given an inch. And the civil rights movement came about to force this issue by, first of all, peaceful marching. Of course, any peaceful march, if they're not getting their own, gets more and more aggressive. And the more aggressive they got, the more aggressive the Protestants got to stop the Catholics having any more say, even through the civil rights marches, which were legal. So what they started to do was burning the Catholic houses out. Their next-door neighbours that they'd lived next door to for years and years and years, I'm not saying harmony, but in perseverance of each other. And our first job, certainly in our battalion, was to try and stop any more people getting burnt out, or if they were on fire, getting the people out safely and then take them to safe houses to rehouse them until the situation was sorted out by the civilian authorities. And of course the crowds were getting bigger and bigger, and the IUC eventually could not contain the crowd situation by themselves, and that's why they called the army in, and that's what we went in to do.
So when you first got there, did any RUC officers come along to explain things to you or to help?
Well,
we
always had RUC and B specials with us, because B specials were still legal and fully armed at the time. And they were the people who knew the streets inside out and could recognise people on the streets. So at first we were there and we were patrolling the streets because there was an awful lot of vigilantes on the street, and that's what they were called, and that's what they were doing. And they would patrol their own streets, Catholics to stop Protestants getting in, Protestants to stop Catholics getting in. And we were there on the interface to stop the two forces clashing. And we kept it well contained at first, and then, of course, the marches in the centre of Belfast and the prominently Catholic Falls area and the prominently Protestant Shankill area were coming to a head. And obviously the IUC found out there was going to be almighty clashes in various Protestant estates, because they were the ones, they were the aggressors all the time in this. The Catholics were on the defence, and we were there to defend them. And we went into places like the Tiger Bay area, which was prominently Protestant. And we would go forward, and the commander, our company commanders would go forward in the Land Rovers, and they would have CS gas grenades. And they would disperse or use gas, and if they wouldn't, we'd throw the gas forward, gas the people, go forward, knock the barricades down, and we'd roll up the streets. And we did that, and then we did it in the Woodstock area, and that worked as well. And then it came to the hardline Shankill area, where the Protestants were out in force, right on the borderline of the Catholic enclave of Unity Flats and Townsend Flats. And the idea was our 1st Battalion of the Light Infantry, who were the resident battalion there and in charge of that particular area, they were getting a little bit overwhelmed and asked for further assistance. So the 2nd Battalion of the Light Infantry and the 3rd Battalion of the Light Infantry, so this is the first time that the whole Brigade of Light Infantry since the Battle of Salamanca were shoulder to shoulder in a showdown against an enemy. One light were pinned down, we came over the top of them in our box formation as we'd been practicing at the back of the factory. And the explanations was given by the police of what to do and what not to do to us and to the crowd, that they would just disperse quietly and orderly and move off the streets and away from the Catholic enclave. And of course they weren't having any of it. And by that time you had the World's Press there as well. So there we were in box formation, waiting for anything, and the first bullets came down the street, fired by the Protestants from the higher part of the Shankill Road, and hit the first IUC constable called PC Harbottle, Harbuckle, and he got shot and consequently died. And a couple of our lads got peppered a bit, but not injuries, but it was bouncing off the clothing because of the distance they'd been fired from. So we tried to maintain the box formation and move up towards Townsend Flats, and then the next volley of bullets that came down forced us to go onto the ground, so the bullets would go over the top of us. At the meantime, the IUC were trying to move forward. And the situation, and it was about 7 o'clock on a Friday night anyway, and it was starting to come in dark, or was dark. So our 3rd Battalion came over the top of us, and they took to the Shankill streets itself. So there was all 3 battalions now deployed, and we were trying to force our way up the streets and maintain the enclave road junction at the same time. Don't know the exact figures, but something like, oh, the deputy colonel of the 1st Battalion, I think, got wounded, and a couple of others. A couple of our lads got shot and just slightly wounded, but 3 ally who were now forcing themselves up the streets and taking enemy fire and then obviously inflicting enemy casualties, they went up and they shot 7 or 8 of the Protestants, but at the tune of about 19 to 20, 22 of them actually getting wounded in the arms and legs, because they were walking up the street behind the IUC pigs, the one-ton Humber vehicles, which we call pigs because that's what they look like. But in them days, they didn't have skirts on, so the bullets were coming underneath and nicking people's ankles or hitting them in the elbows. So anyway, this ensued throughout that night and through the Saturday and right into the Sunday morning. And by the time we got to the top of the Shankill Road, there was burnt out vehicles and buses and houses and everything else, and people were taking their injured away and soldiers were being injured. But we quelled it, we stopped the riot. And General Freeland at the time, who was GOC of Northern Ireland, it physically said, well done the light infantry, we'll all be home for Christmas. Thinking once we'd quell this one, that was it.
It must have been quite frightening. Or had you time to think about it?
You didn't have time to think about it, but it was, I suppose, the small distance between fright and excitement at the same time. It was something we hadn't done before. It was quite exciting. It was just the overall overwhelming number of civilians that were there facing us.
And was that right across the age range?
Oh, yes, from the smallest to the oldest. I mean, and there was on what we used to call shipyard confetti. Ball bearings, nuts, balls, everything from Harland and Wolf that could be thrown was thrown. Flagstones were broken up into man-sizable chunks to throw arrows. Sticks, stones, bottles, bricks, petrol bombs, anything that could come your way came. And we were trying to maintain this push forward and keeping the Protestants out of the Catholic enclave. Because if they getting into Unity Flats, there would have been all-out murder. So that was maintained. But it took 3 battalions.
And presumably there was the language with it as well, the crowd screaming.
God, I mean, every typical abuse you could think of was, and I mean, you could come out with the riots and you would be covered in spit and gauze, and I mean, you would literally covered, it would be hanging off your face, your hat, your clothes, everything. When you push through them crowds, they give every type of abuse, and spitting and snotting all over you. And this went on really for the month of December and right through.
And it was the same situation, that this was your role, this box formation role.
Well, box formations, in a way, it worked that night, and it did what it did, and there was no mass murders and things like that. But after that, it was back to patrolling and back to containing people, and the rule went out that anybody more than 4 or 5 people constituted a crowd, and they had to be dispersed. So if you saw 5 or 6 people gathering outside a pub, you'd go straight across and you'd split them up. And then
did they split readily?
No. I've seen we'd have to go in again with the batons and stuff like that and chase them down streets. And so we had to put curfews on. So anybody gathering in small groups and after 11 o'clock at night. So the streets by 11 o'clock at night, or 10 o'clock at night, in fact, I think it was, had to be cleared. Nobody on the streets apart from soldiers and policemen.
Well, what date are we talking about?
December 69. So there we were, patrolling day and night, 24 hours a day, in small groups of soldiers.
Can I ask you how the patrol worked? You wouldn't just be formed in a group.
Well, what we do, we're starting to take over things like youth clubs and empty houses above shops and things at flashpoints, or a house at the top of New Lodge Road, so you could see that pub there, so you could see what people were doing in the pub, and you could see up and down the street, and you could... all around view, so you could look up and down the different streets and see where people were gathering, and we'd be enclaved in there and we'd barricade ourselves in, put routes in and out, and then we'd just patrol. There'd be 8 or 10 men in each little thing, but in cover, helping each other.
A single file, or what was he?
What, the patrolling? There'd be 2 on that side, there were 2 on that side, so they'd be covering windows and doors left and right, and they'd be covering doors on the left. And you go around, and it was Hearts and Minds, the famous thing that we still do this day and age. Hearts and Minds, get the majority of the people behind you, because they don't want to be burnt out and they don't want violence on their streets. So you would talk to the people, talk to the Catholics, talk to the Protestants. And you kept it fairly well under charge, under control, apart from the odd shooting here, the odd shooting there. Because you've got to remember at this time, the IRA had about 12 weapons in Belfast. And then it was getting towards the Christmas time. Before the Christmas time, it blew up. This was all in West Belfast. It all started blowing up in East Belfast, again in the Protestant areas, over in the Woodstock. Because I spent Christmas and right up to New Year on the east of Belfast in a place called Mount Pottinger. And we were living in the police station and we were patrolled from the police station. But the bus depot had been burned out and various big businesses had been burned out, and we were there to try and stop it getting any further than that. So, and Ian Paisley was the instigator of all the big marches. In fact, his own people tried to kill him, and our D company physically saved his life.
Do you recall how that came out? What happened?
Yeah, he was talking to the people and he was trying to tell them to calm it a little bit, and of course these people were furious and they didn't want to get... So a gentleman came out of the crowd to more or less attack him with an axe. And so we stopped that happening. And then we said we would use gas. And of course, Ian Pearcey wanted a respirator. And I must admit, we didn't give him one. So he got the gas same as everybody else, and we were all in respirators. So I'd spent Christmas and New Year.
He'd realised what you'd done for him. I mean, that's.
Well, I don't know. I mean, we were there to stop anybody getting hurt, you know, the right and the wrong people. But he was the instigator, he was the voice, he was the man who was controlling all the Protestants in Belfast. Except in this occasion, the crowd weren't 100% listening to him and wanted more violence. And he was nearly the culprit of his own rioting. But. I then moved back from the east of Belfast, back to the west of Belfast, just before New Year, in fact. And then
Were any of the leaders of both sides being? You mentioned Paisley, of course, being identified by yourself. Were you being told to look out for?
Well, the only two voices, because you only had to listen to the news, apart from Craig and the proper legal people in power. It was Paisley on the Protestant side and Bernadette Devlin, now McCluskey, on the Catholic side. They were the two voices of the two opposing factions, if you want.
But you didn't have a rogues gallery situation of photographs of people you had to watch out for?
Well, that was being formed, literally. I mean,
that came later,
we've gone in, yeah, because we've gone in so fast. I mean, there was no real intelligence. It was another British part of Britain, and we'd already had five battalions over there, always, in the different parts of the province, because we used to train over there, and it was just another garrison, like Colchester, like York, like anywhere else, except this had all flared up. So the riots were going on here, they were also going on in Londonderry still and everywhere else. I mean, I'm just talking about Belfast here.
How well disciplined were you? I'm assuming you were pretty well disciplined. Were men losing themselves, losing their rag, you might say?
No, that never ever happened.
You're pretty strictly disciplined. And
among the soldiers, we were doing drill. It was, again, goes all the way back to training. Drill, drill, drill. So we were doing what we had to do and keeping the two factions apart. Even on the patrols, up and down. You were frightened, but you didn't show it, and you just kept on patrolling, day and night, day and night. So, just after the New Year, we're back in West Belfast, and again, patrolling the now Catholic areas, because the Catholics had now changed against us. We'd bust all the Protestant marches up, and the barricades, and knocked all the barricades down, and everything else. And the Catholics were now settling in the Lower Falls area, and the Protestants were now settling, as Protestants, in the Shankill area. They were now splitting of what we now know, if you look at the maps, into orange and green. And we were starting to share the colours in then. Where were the people migrating to? And we were starting to share the old maps in, even in them days, in 69. So 70 started coming about, and we're more or less getting the situation under control. At least there was no mass burning and murdering going on, and we were in the middle of it. The B specials by then had been halted and disarmed, later to be disbanded, but they were getting disarmed, although I know for a fact they didn't. The weapons went from over the big raincoats to under the raincoats, but that's by the by. And we started taking over youth clubs and factories like Flack Street Mill and other mills, and we were turning them into army camps that are still there now after 30-odd years. So we were taking over bases and getting ourselves settled in. And bit by bit, we'll go back to the Antrim factory to get a little bit of respite and a proper food. But we were patrolling them days on end, without getting showered or shaved properly. The Catholics, at the first part, up until Christmas, were feeding us. They would leave baskets of foods on windowsills for the army. And they would have sandwiches and cakes and biscuits and bottles of milk And then they would say, do you want to come in? Oh, when was the last time you had a shower? And you say, well, about a week ago. So they'd let you in, and two of us at a time would get in the bath and have a bath in the Catholic house. And then after Christmas, it just went all pear-shaped, where the Catholics weren't allowed, because the IRA were obviously infiltrating in now and getting a bit more stronger. And they were saying, well, the army aren't doing a very good job of protecting the Catholics. We will look after the Catholics. So that's how they gained strength. And the food stopped, and people would say, well, we want to let you in for a wash and a shave, and we want to feed you, but we daren't now, So they were frightened of their own people by now.
So this is the IRA influencing these people
against you? The Captain Gate. Well, they were saying the army aren't helping you anymore, so we will help you. Of course, we were helping them, and the people knew that. But it looked like this was the start of the long haul that we didn't realise was going to happen. And we had the Protestants fairly under control, and like I said, we'd pushed all the barriers down, we'd opened all the streets, and we stopped the mass burnings. And by the time 13th of January come, it was time for our battalion to hand over to the Parachute Battalion and the Royal Marines, and we left Ireland. We came back to Colchester yet again. So that was the first tour of Northern Ireland over and done with for my battalion.
That was the first tour?
That was the first tour.
Conditions under which you were living and acting, what were they like?
Well, we went in so fast, there was nowhere to live. We were sleeping in shop doorways. And we would try and get some sleep on a night time, and the beast specialists would guard us. Then we'd go a little bit more patrolling and find somewhere else to sleep, even if it was the back of a youth club or a derelict house. And if the CQMS found you, as he came, patrolled the streets in his Land Rover overnight with his urns of stew in the back, if he found you, he fed you. And if he didn't find you, you didn't get fed. And because weather was getting a bit harsh now in December, and we had no winter clothes, we got issued with string vests, and that was our winter clothing.